It's 5:06 and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later in the program, we'll talk to the school administrator leading an effort to fix the racial achievement gap in Wisconsin education.
First, there's been a lot of debate in recent years over changing the size, scope, and budget of the United States military. There have been plenty of proposals on the table, and most recently, President Obama has called for a new round of defense cuts and the reduction of troop levels to pre-World War II levels.
But our next guest has another idea for reorganizing the military. It's a big one. Get rid of the United States Air Force. He says the country has need of air power, but not necessarily a separate air force. And he says the military would be better served by abolishing the branch and dividing its assets between the Army and the Navy.
We're joined now by Robert Farley. He's an assistant professor at the Patterson School of Diplomacy and International Commerce at the University of Kentucky. He's the author of Grounded, The Case for Abolishing the United States Air Force. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start right with your title. What is the case to be made for doing something this drastic, ending an entire branch of the U.S. military, in this case the Air Force?
Well, my argument is that while the United States needs air power, we need military aviation to support just about any kind of military operation or deterrence or anything else we want to conduct, that dividing and appropriating an entire service specifically to military aviation doesn't make sense in terms of the politics of how the military comes together. It doesn't make sense in terms of how the finances of the military come together. And finally, tends to create bureaucratic walls between organizations and between missions that tend to interrupt the way that military missions actually come together. And so having an Air Force is kind of an unnecessary bureaucratic reform that we embarked on in 1947, and it would be best for us to rethink that and to fold the assets into the other services.
Well, let's go back to 1947. What was the case for an independent Air Force? How did we end up there?
Well, the argument in 1947 was that the Air Force had, at least in large part, and this was the argument made by aviators, that the Air Force had virtually won the war, won World War II on its own. This was in both Europe and in the Pacific, and that especially if we'd had an independent Air Force prior to World War II, we would have been able to conduct two large, wide-scale strategic bombing campaigns against the German and Japanese homelands, and we would have been able to destroy their economies, bring their societies to a halt, and essentially force them to surrender without ever having to conduct D-Day. Of course, we didn't have to invade Japan, but that you could have won the war without sort of the messy need to invade the continent and then to defeat the German army. And so the idea after World War II is that we should organize our military aviation assets around just this goal, around winning wars with aviation itself, with strategic bombing.
So you're saying that that made sense, you know, back in 1947, but today things have changed and we don't need to do that.
Well, I don't even. It was an idea that was contested in 1947. It was an idea that was contested before 1947, really. The arguments that were made back then were flawed in a lot of ways, and they were disagreed with by people in the other services. And so I think even from the vantage of 1947, looking at what had just happened in World War II, the decision to create an Air Force was based on a faulty assessment of what had actually gone on, that we needed to invade Europe. We did need to defeat the German army, and we did need to occupy pretty much all of Germany with four big armies. And so even from the vantage of World War II, it wasn't a good idea.
Running through your book is the idea that this notion that you just talked about, that we can win wars with air power almost by itself, makes it too easy for us to justify waging war. It provides a low-cost alternative for policymakers. How has that gotten us into trouble over the years?
Well, if you go back and look at several of the wars that the United States has had during the entire post-war period after World War II, there have been several cases in which the war starts with policymakers not having a really sensible appraisal of what all the costs would be. And of course, you never know all of the costs that are going to be associated with war, so it's always a risky endeavor. But before the Vietnam War, some of the earliest predictions, and these came out of the Air Force and people associated with air power, were that Vietnam would be able to be forced out of the war, North Vietnam would be able to be forced out of the war through a strategic bombing campaign that would target their society, their industry, their infrastructure. And this eventually developed into something we call Rolling Thunder, and this failed. In Kosovo, which is a war that was, in fact, entirely won from the air eventually, largely won from the air, the expectation was that the war would be much shorter, that it would be much cheaper, that Serbia could be defeated without much trouble. And I think that even in sort of the most recent cases, and in fact just a couple days ago, there was an Air Force colonel who proposed sending F-22s to Ukraine in order to deter and defeat the Russian Army and Air Force if they decided to invade Ukraine, which in my view would end up embroiling us in a pretty horrible war with the Russians that, at least if we only used F-22s, we would almost certainly lose.
Now, part of the argument that you make here is that military efforts require coordination and that the Air Force rolled into these other units could coordinate more effectively, and it's sort of redundant on the other side. But is there going to be a hidden cost to losing the consolidation of a single military branch, maybe that we can't even foresee right now?
Yeah, I mean, one of the arguments that the book makes is that every way we can think about organizing our bureaucracies, and this goes for the whole of government, it's not limited just to thinking about military affairs and to the military services, but there are going to be costs and benefits associated with every way that we have of thinking about putting our military together. And we are going to find that there are costs to, if we decide to go along with this plan, and if we decide to fold the Air Force back into the other services, we are going to find that there are costs, and some of these are going to be expected costs. We can expect probably that we will have fewer capabilities in something that's called global precision strike. We can expect that there may be fewer capabilities in terms of fast responsiveness in different parts of the globe. But that those are going to be outweighed by the benefits, and benefits in terms of the politics, where the president is going to have a better sense of what the options are, benefits in terms of eliminating redundancy and hopefully cutting cost in the Department of Defense. But it is, in the end, basically a value trade-off, that it comes down to what you want your military to do and what you don't want it to do, and just a sense of what you would really like to have.
We're talking right now with Robert Farley, who says the United States would be better off if we abolished the Air Force and divided its assets amongst the other branches of the military. And we'd love to know what you think. Would you be in favor of the idea, or do you see value in our country having a strong, independent Air Force? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking with Professor Robert Farley of the University of Kentucky. In his new book, Grounded, he says that the United States should abolish the United States Air Force, divide up its assets and its missions between the Army and the Navy. What do you think? Do you think our military would benefit from that that change? Do you think it's important, though, to retain a strong, independent Air Force? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@WPR.org. Go right to a caller now at 800-642-1234. We've got Brad on the line in Mequon. Brad, hi.
Hello. Just wanted to respond. I'm neutral regarding, for example, whether we fold the Air Force into the Army and the Navy. But I think one of the earlier points that the speaker mentioned, that by having a separate Air Force, there's a greater temptation to use air power to solve problems, I think would still be there, because you still would have the same number of planes, except they'd be divided among the Navy and the Army. And so someone would say, well, instead of using the Air Force to solve a problem without committing ground troops, let's use the Army Air Force to solve a problem without committing ground troops, and there would still be the same temptation.
Brad, thanks.
And I'll take my comment off the air.
Thanks for the call. Robert, do you buy that, or do you think there's something psychological about having, or maybe bureaucratic, about having a separate Air Force that leads us to think differently about how we intervene militarily?
Well, I mean, first I want to thank Brad for the comment, because it's an excellent question. Putting aviation assets into the Navy and into the Army accomplishes at least one thing from a political point of view. It means that there isn't a bureaucratic organization out there that is completely dedicated to the idea that aviation and air power is absolutely critical to American well-being and to the success of the American experiment, and that is competing with two other organizations for funding, for prominence, for procurement money, and really for a place in the sun. And so you don't have generals who are, and colonels who are sort of consciously or unconsciously, their professional and their political and their even their sort of their enthusiasms are all coming together around this idea that aviation is the tool that can solve problems. Instead, you have Navy admirals and Army generals who, at least hopefully, have a more holistic understanding of the use of military force and who don't think about solving particular problems just with one tool, but think about solving it with a combination of tools, and that this gives us and gives civilian policymakers a more full appraisal of what the cost and benefits of a war are going to be, right? So not just that war is going to be cheap and easy and we can solve it with bombs, but that, no, we might need this and this and this and this, and that gives us a better sense of what we're actually going to need.
Well, thank you much for that call. And Robert, one question might be, is the Army, is the Navy capable of absorbing an entire branch of the U.S. military? Now, there's not only logistical problems or at least technical challenges, but there's also an entire culture there to account for.
Right. At least in the case of the Army, we do have this historical example that for the first 30 years of American military aviation, the air service was controlled almost entirely by the Army. It was the Army Air Service, then the Army Air Corps, then eventually the Army Air Force. In World War II, the union of the Army and the Air Force was a much, much larger organization than the organization we have now, in terms of, the number of aircraft it had, in terms of the number of personnel that it had. There were cultural problems between the two parts of the organization, but they were fundamentally resolvable. So in terms of sheer size, I think the answer is yes. In terms of culture, I like to look at the Navy. The Navy has been incredibly successful with naval aviation over the years, such that its aviation team is regarded as just as successful as the Air Force's aviation team, in terms of putting fighters in the air, in terms of strike and so forth. And so I think there's already evidence that you can integrate aviation assets pretty well into the other two organizations without running a serious risk that you're really going to lose out on capabilities.
Go back to our callers now. We've got Bobby with us in Lake Holcomb. Bobby, hi.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What do you think of this?
I think that this is the wrong question at the wrong time. We need the United States Air Force. I'm a retired Marine. The United States has never fought a war since World War I where we did not have air supremacy. Now, you can talk about strategic bombing campaigns or close air support, but the Air Force has adapted. And we cannot do without the United States Air Force. I mean, the better question would be, and I shiver to say this, is do we need a Marine Corps?
Well, that's quite a question from a former Marine. Bobby, thank you so much for making that call. What do you think, Robert? The Air Force has been a vital part of air supremacy in every war we've been in since World War I. Why get rid of something that's working?
Well, I guess I want to answer that in two ways, and the second way is going to refer to the Marine Corps specifically. First, we have other services that have achieved air supremacy in the wars that we've had since we've had an independent Air Force, and that has been the United States Navy. In the Vietnam War, there's virtually no question among historians that naval aviators were superior to their Air Force counterparts in fighting, in conducting air superiority and dogfighting, in fighting the North Vietnamese Air Force. And this was due to a variety of reasons. They had better equipment than the Air Force counterparts. They had better training than their Air Force counterparts. And so that in and of itself leaves questions in my mind that you absolutely need this independent organization in order to achieve air supremacy, right? Because we've done it with non-independent organizations in the past that come up with better stuff and that come up with better training. And the second part, and this is, people bring up the Marine Corps a lot, You know, the Marine Corps right now is in the midst of essentially mortgaging its entire future to buy fighter aircraft, in part, not entirely, but in part, because it doesn't feel that it can rely on the support of the United States Air Force to do what it wants. And this is, you know, will it have close air support? Will it have interdiction and transport that it depends on the Air Force to provide? And the Marine answer has been no. And because it's no, the Marine Corps is spending itself almost into bankruptcy, buying expensive fighters and expensive transport aircraft.
Well, thank you for that call, Bobby. And we move next to Bill in Merrill. Hi, Bill.
Hi. The question I have, or the point I have, is that the Air Force has a strategic responsibility that is not shared by the Army, the Navy, or the Marine Corps, although the Navy has missile assets that are pretty equal to what the Air Force has as missile assets. The Army's Air Corps, or Air Supplement, is tactical, with helicopters to support and to transport troops, whereas the Air Force is working with strategic responsibilities instead.
Okay, thanks a lot for the thoughts, Bill. And Robert, what about that, that the Air Force has a specialized mission and it doesn't quite mesh with the other aims of those branches?
Well, again, there are two ways to answer this. The first way is that some of the assets that, I'm not arguing that we entirely shutter every capability that the Air Force has, right? And it's more complicated simply than we'll repaint the insignia on Air Force aircraft so that they read Navy or Army. But in some cases, it's literally that simple, that you will simply transition, as we've done in the past, aircraft from one service to another. And so you'll retain some of that capability. But the caller also gets to a pretty good point in that, yeah, I mean, the Air Force does have this specialized strategic capability. But in my view, and I think that history bears this out, this strategic capability, strategic long-range strike for decisive political effect, is the thing that the Air Force does least well. And that it's this thing that we should really very seriously think about. Is this something we really want to devote a tremendous amount of our military resources to? Or do we want to focus our resources more clearly on the things that air power does well, which is being in support of naval operations, being in support of Army operations, so that you have two very effective services that do things very well, rather than sort of spend a lot gambling on the promise of strategic air power?
And speaking of spending, do you see money saved in making this transition, or at least money better spent?
I see money better spent, certainly, and I think even in the fairly short term, we see money better spent. The money saved comes more in the medium and the long term, where we transition away from spending tremendous amounts on maintaining strategic long-range strike capabilities, and we focus on more on making our military services as effective at the operational and tactical jobs that we want them to do. The spending savings we get from eliminating redundancy, we get from changing the way we train, and in long-range procurement, we get less expensive aircraft in the long run.
As we wrap up here, it seems as though getting rid of the Air Force would be difficult. It would take a long time to accomplish. In the meantime, are there steps that could be taken right now to get at some of the issues that you're worried about?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we can take steps even in the short term to ensure that the services work better together, especially with respect to procurement. Procurement is an area where each of the services still primarily decides on what it wants without thinking over much about the requirements that other services have. And I think that reforming the procurement process so that it goes in more joint direction so that you have more of a conversation between the three services is a good idea. I think that would solve a lot of the problems associated with the F-35. I would say also that breaking the golden rule is something that's been around since the 60s, where essentially the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force all get roughly equal amounts of the budget, no matter who we're planning on fighting, no matter what the strategic environment looks like, you always essentially give each one the same amount of money, is something that really needs to be broken. That's the biggest problem we have, and that reforming that will go a long way to solving some of the short-term problems we have.
Robert, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you.
That's Robert Farley. He's an assistant professor at the Patterson School of Diplomacy and International Commerce at the University of Kentucky. He's the author of the new book, Grounded: The Case for Abolishing the United States Air Force.